I was there the day Horus slew the Emperor.
Hello and welcome to the Iterators Podcast, a podcast about the Horus Heresy game system for the hobby, gaming, and lore enthusiast. My name is Daniel. I'm joined by my co-host Josh.
What is up, everybody?
All right, so today we have a guest on, and it is one of our local 30K community members. He's an awesome bat rep writer. He does all of our bat reps in our community. He's also an Ultramarines and an Iron Warriors player. And honestly, he's probably the most narrative driven player I've ever played with. So please welcome on the podcast, Josh.
Hello, yes, I'm also Josh. I'm going to be a guest Josh, as far
as it goes. One distinction that we want to get out of the way right now is that since we have Josh and Josh here on this channel.
There's a third one in our community as well.
We'll get him on at some time. But
all three of us, even.
At once. No, don't do that to me. Do not do that to me. But in any case, what we're going to do is that just to make a distinction, I'm going to do my best. I mean, hey, I'm not perfect. But anytime I'm addressing any one of y'all, I'm going to say either guest Josh or iterator Josh.
Yeah, that works.
But in any case, what this episode is going to be all about is we're going to be talking about how guest Josh creates narrative-driven bat reps that I would say brings to life everything that happens on the tabletop. So, you know, instead of just playing a game and going, oh, okay, well, you know, let's say you and me, you know, decide to do a quick pickup game or whatever it is, or even a campaign game, any sort of game for that matter.
Right.
Instead of just going, okay, hey, that was pretty cool, and that was the end of that, right? Why don't we actually flesh that out and actually create something that's fun and interesting as far as like telling the story? Because here at the Iterators Podcast, we're all about telling the story. We're all about telling that narrative. And so one thing that you do, guest Josh, is that you actually you flesh that out and you bring the tabletop battle to life.
So you're taking those events of the battle report, like of the actual battle that happened, you know, when you guys are actually throwing dice and the actual results of those challenges that you're playing out on the tabletop, and you're taking those. And then, you know, there in part one, we're going to talk about how you transfer that into an actual story and how you bring characters into it and you create a wider or a larger picture behind just that battle report. Yeah. And that's going to be really exciting for everyone to hear. And then in part two, we're going to be going over, and really this is something that I've been getting really into over the past few weeks and doing some stuff with, but I'm really excited to see how you use it in when we discuss in part two, is how the terrain and environment is really going to help play that, you know, help play into the story and how you're going to use that as well. And it sounds like that's also from like a narrative system from the gameplay as well, right?
Yeah. The way that the terrain is laid out on the tabletop really contributes to that story and how you get immersed in the setting.
Yeah, immersion. And,
what the characters are experiencing and seeing as they look around and traverse this tabletop, you know, world that we've set up.
Right, and we love immersion here at the Iterators Podcast. So, and then in the end, we're going to be going over one of the battle reports he actually made. We're not going to literally just read it out to you, but we're going to go over some really cool examples from it.
Yeah, right. And the cool thing about the example aspect is we're going to go, okay, now here's the two parts, you know, after part one and part two about, you know, setting the scene and how you do it, the inspiration of what you're doing, as well as, you know, and then as well as how the terrain help tell the story as well, that part three is going to be kind of a culmination.
And it ties in with some of the previous episodes that we've been doing as well.
Yeah, and it's going to be awesome. So stick around and we'll be hitting all that awesome narrative content that I know all y'all love listening to right up. Okay, welcome back to part one of this episode. And one thing that we're going to be, that I'm, at least for me, I'm extremely excited about is how you capture the tabletop events and then turn those events into a narrative bat rep. And I love that. I think that that's something that a lot of people always had the kind of the idea of what they wanted to do. And I think a lot of people, when they initially start to play Warhammer, any Warhammer game, whether it be 30K, 40K, Age of Sigmar,
right,
whatever it is, right? I think, you know, when you initially, most people, I'm not going to speak for everyone, but when most people get into it, they see these models, they see how they look and, mm-hmm. and their iconography on them. And
you read the stories, you get into the lore and everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then when you play this game on the tabletop, especially like almost like as a kid, you know, you get like, oh, you know, these are these cool events that happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, or there's almost like the imagination,
right.
you know, that's going off on your mind as you're rolling dice. It's almost like bringing back your inner kid.
Yeah.
You know?
100%.
And so it's almost like recapturing that energy,
uh-huh.
right? And then bringing that back and actually fleshing out your boys and on the tabletop. And that's what I love what you do, guest Josh, is that you perfectly encapsulate that concept. And so one thing is setting the scene with the mindset of the characters. I know that's one thing yes. that you really like initially, that's your kind of your initial point, right?
Yeah.
That you start off. So why don't you explain to us exactly how you do that?
So it's a lot of discussion with your opponent. Actually, you know, during and after the game, I like to go to my opponent and see, you know, his characters that he's running, talk to them. What are your characters like? What are their mannerisms? Any personality traits that stand out, you know, tics, things of that nature, and you get a sense of who they are, what their motivations are, and where they fit into this galaxy at large.
That's cool. So you're basically what you're doing is you're getting like, so you'll go to someone and be like, hey, you know, your character is, who is your, well, yeah, I think that's the first thing is who is your character?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And what makes him tick? Right. So like yeah. if we're looking at previous episodes and stuff, you know, and like how to create a character, right. You know, and
all the examples we've used mm-hmm. there, you know, work really well here. Yeah.
Exactly. And so basically like the more ammo that your fellow player gives you,
right.
The more that you can work off of that as far as almost like pre-understanding of what, like the pre-concept of what goes on, right? So like yeah. you're almost planning ahead of time, you know, about when you're, before you even play the game. Correct me if I'm wrong, is it before you play the game when you do this or is this after?
It's,
or?
It can be either. It's mm-hmm. It's really to get a sense of, you know, most people, they have a pretty good conception of what they want their character to be like, and they mm-hmm. they have all these ideas going into it that you can essentially piggyback off of and become, you know, bring out their characteristics throughout the battle report.
And I think another thing with that as well that I know I've seen just from, and as far as in our community, is that level of cooperation within yeah. our community where everyone's working together to kind of create this larger story at play. I think that Definitely. Kind of is what you're saying there.
And I like to involve them in it as well if they have any ideas or things that they'd like to see
uh-huh.
Because they're going through this experience with you. Right.
And you do that in a really, you do that in a really respectful, I think it's a really respectful way. I remember one of our players, you had a game with Spencer and his warlord had died. And I remember and the way you guys worked that out with as far as, hey, you know, how do we want to work this in? What works for your character? What works in the campaign at large? And it was like a group effort to be like, hey, what can we do with that? And then you wrote that up in a battle report. I remember it was like Officer Stone or something like that.
Yeah.
The Imperial Fist.
Oh, okay. I remember that. Like,
Steel. Yeah.
Steel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The best way to put it is that there is a sense of cooperation between you and your opponent or your fellow players on the tabletop. Mm-hmm. That is, I think, really indicative of how the 30K community operates in the first place.
Yeah.
So it's not really like you're going to be pulling teeth over here.
No,
like,
of course not.
All right, well, you know, what is that Praetor all about?
Tell me more about your favorite, right? About your favorite Space Marines.
No, I will not tell you anything about
People get really fired up to see their characters brought to life, and they like to see this story, and I like to make that happen. It's just a neat a process that is enriched definitely when the person that you're playing against wants to get involved with that.
Well, as far as getting into, you know, one thing that I guess to kind of guide and what helped, you know, us think about this part one and what we wanted to talk about. We actually got a bunch of questions, or we've been getting a lot of feedback and a lot of questions from the listeners over the past few weeks in particular. And, you know, number one, thank you for all the questions, feedback. And it's been a lot of fun going through and seeing that those different questions and seeing you guys' models, and particularly with
the stories behind their characters as well.
Yeah. Well, and even seeing it was really a cool moment for me. There was a guy that reached out and, you know, messaged saying he was enjoying stuff. And it was the same guy. I recognized his name. And I literally sent this Josh that other person's Iron Warriors. Like, I had seen you his Iron Warriors in the past as inspiration for your Iron Warriors. And then he's reaching out, and that was really cool. But one question that we're getting a lot from you guys, all that to say, is over the past few episodes, is a lot of people are asking, like, hey, I don't really feel confident, or I'm maybe not the best storyteller, right? That's not something I've done before. Like, to go from just, like, you know, obviously when you're doing these battle reports, you're not saying the 10 tactical Marines advanced, you know, rapid fire their bolters and killed, you know, you're not doing a literally play by play like that. Yeah. It's a story, you know, more than that. So how do you go about kind of determining and, you know, choosing what things to focus on and what things to write about and what things to, I guess, omit and skip?
So a lot of that has come from just being inspired by, you know, actually reading some of these Warhammer novels that I've written from. I find that the most compelling parts of those are not, like, you know, in the thick of battle, he's, you know, this many Marines died or whatever.
Okay.
It's the perspective of the characters themselves.
Okay.
And what they're experiencing in the moment.
So you're really getting into the mind of the character and thinking what's their experience, and you're trying to more so write about, you know, that almost not objective but subjective Astartes experience.
Perspective.
Right, that perspective.
Yeah, I mean, like a good example of that, if you look at Betrayer, right?
Yes.
You know, a lot of it's written from Karn's perspective.
Yes.
And you know, you're not really looking, I mean, if you're reading the book, you're not looking at, oh, like, this many tacticals died. It's not really like a regiment.
It's not a battle report.
Yeah.
It's a story.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a story. And you're seeing, like, oh, and there was cloudy, you know, there's so many people kicking up dust because of the buildings were crashing down and yada, 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 you know? And so you couldn't really see, like, 10 feet in front of you, sort of like, it's building this scene in your brain as you're reading it. And you're going, oh, like, it's so much more... It paints a picture in your head that's so much more compelling than it is, these 10 tacticals shot these guys.
It's not
a
lab report.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the best way to put it. Yeah.
Because you're relating directly to that character. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not just, you know, looking at a map or anything, you know, in some room and just saying, yeah, I see these guys moving this way.
Yeah.
Well, and that, I think that's something that you do really well, is you try to come up with characters that, you know, obviously they can relate to. So I guess where's the tie-in for you, and without getting into specific examples, but you guys, it's like with your battle reports, you kind of take the background of the mindset of the character and what that person and, you know, what that player's story is, and you kind of combine that with your guys and your story. And then play it out together where they, you know, kind of everyone wins and everyone gets what they want.
Yeah.
And then it sounds like kind of at the end, you're just, you know, and then I guess the story touches is you're taking it from a, you know, a character's perspective, and you're giving it that more personal touch.
So recently I read Fulgrim, one of the Horus Heresy novels. And then I read sort of the counterpart to that, Angel Exterminatus. And in Fulgrim, you have the perspective of the Emperor's children and the way they experience the world. And their values are, you know, perfection and, like, seeking beauty and art and everything. And then you have the Iron Warriors, and they have this very industrial, cold, detached perspective. And when they kind of collide in Angel Exterminatus, you see how that plays out.
Huh.
Where you see the Emperor's children, you know, getting off of their dropship, and they have this large procession, and it's all fancy, and then Perturabo and his guys are standing there like, what is going on here?
they're looking at their watch, they're like, come on,
they're
got things to do.
That's too funny. That's so in for his children, though.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's very cool to see those two things collide, and that's kind of where I draw inspiration from for capturing the perspective of each legion. Because you have these very different groups of people coming together. and clashing there.
So you're kind of going in and creating almost like your own flavor for your guys, and how, you know, I mean, you're literally doing it as if they were in a Black Library novel is the way that you look at going about it.
So, and kind of going off of that, a lot of times, or there's one thing you told me once, it was quite some time ago, but it's always stuck with me. And it was when the story that you're the Bat Rep itself, right? It's the story is telling itself, right?
Yes.
So it, when, I mean, getting back to the question, it's, you know, how do I make that immersive experience? How do I go about right. that? The story, you're playing it
yes.
as you're rolling dice, yes. as you're moving models, right. as you're, you know, taking aim and firing at that squad or charging this squad yeah. or running away or dying. I mean, good and the bad. Everything right. that happens on the tabletop yeah. is telling the story. Mm-hmm. And so, and again, getting back to what you told me, you know, a few months ago when I was asking, when I first asked you, how do you go about writing these bat reps?
Yeah.
What you said was the events on the tabletop tell the story. You just have to flesh it out, you right. know? And so... You don't have to
be the real iterator.
Here. Yeah, right. We're just imposters.
I know, he
man.
Shouldn't be the actual iterator, Josh.
it's definitely because it's a game that's based on chance, right? You have mm-hmm. your bell curve, you know, things, events that happen a lot, like you roll a bolter shot and it hits, whatever. And then you have events that happen less or, you know, more outliers. Mm-hmm. You know, like maybe a guy rolls, his entire squad gets killed. Mm-hmm. Right, he's the last guy left, but he rolls snake eyes on his mm-hmm. leadership test and stays despite, you know, being massively outnumbered or whatever. maybe it's just a lone apothecary and he's fighting off like world eaters or something yeah. like
yeah
something
and you're,
like that.
You're kind of yeah. taking those highlight moments yes. and making note of them and then kind of fleshing it out and writing it to life and bringing those cool yeah. you know, like you guys are both saying, the story that's being told, you're taking those moments and adding words to them.
And I like that. The thing is, you know, taking note of the highlight moments.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's yeah. exactly it. Because obviously you're not going to be like, oh, and then I moved over here and I moved over there.
Right.
Like it's, you know, we're going, hey, what are the parts that I would, if I was telling a cool yes. story, right? What events that are occurring as I'm rolling dice, as I'm shooting, as I'm in close combat, as people are dying, what are things that are interesting and fun that I remember? Because anytime yeah. we play a game, you know, it's there's always those moments like after the fact when you're like talking post,
you're like, oh, this thing
yeah.
happened.
Yeah, yeah, you know, there's these moments that really kind of click with people yeah. and they're like, hey, dude, that was so cool when, you know, this yeah. sort of whatever thing, or like your example that you gave right here, you know, like your whole squad gets absolutely gunned down.
But that one lone apothecary.
Yeah, with the rolling the double one snake eyes, yeah. he just sees everyone dying. He's like, I'm still here, or something like that, yeah, you know? Yeah. And that's the, like, those moments are the ones that you want to capture in that bat rep.
Definitely.
And then all you're doing is fleshing it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's awesome. The one last thing I did want to kind of touch on here in this initial spot that I think is really cool is all your battle reports that I've read from that you've put up, they all start prior to the battle. Right.
Yes.
None of them start. And I think that's really interesting. And just wanted to get, I guess, the idea for why you start them all in that manner.
So, and I touch on, I talk to people about their characters to get their background. That's, I want to put the reader in the mindset of those characters going into it. Like I want them to know what that character is feeling, what his motivations are coming up, where he's coming from before this. And it really sets the stage for the events and gives them more like new meaning that you might not see, you know, just during the game itself.
That makes sense. So use that kind of pre-battle time in the battle report to discuss the characters and their motivations.
Yes.
And then the events of the battle then tie in and kind of give it a larger meaning and really create yeah. the grander story at play.
Yeah. And it's a good opportunity to work in the history and the time period during this the Horus Heresy of what's going on in the galaxy at large there. Like maybe they're traitors on the way to the Siege of Terra, or maybe
right.
this is, you know, fresh out of the Great Crusade, and these two forces are clashing for the first time,
mm-hmm.
you know, against other Space Marines.
Right.
And that really helps put you in the mindset of like where these characters are at.
And so do you talk to your, like, I know you do it, but just for everyone who's listening, you talk to your opponent prior to actually playing the game to set that scene.
Yeah, so a lot of that comes from campaigns even. The setting of that campaign helps drive where the characters are at and gets that set up.
So you really tie in the larger, you obviously work in the larger campaign. What would be your advice to someone... What would be your advice to someone who maybe doesn't have a larger campaign to play into, or maybe they're just, you know, playing with a buddy or something like that?
Yeah, you don't really necessarily need the campaign setup. You can craft your own narrative with your opponent based on just your knowledge of your Legion's lore and thinking of essentially what situation brings these two factions together. Where do we see them clash in the history and the background of the Horus Heresy.
All right, and welcome back to part two. Now that we kind of set the scene for how to capture the tabletop events on a bat rep, now we're going to be talking about how the terrain and the environment helps tell the story.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things like with the Warhammer universe that all of us absolutely love, if you're a Warhammer fan, is just the absolute, like, there's a specific level of dialed up and over the top craziness that is in the Warhammer universe that you can't find anywhere else. And I think every single Warhammer fan knows exactly what I'm talking about. It's one of the things that they're really passionate and really excited about, at least if they're anything like myself. That's one of my favorite things about the universe. I think that's one of everyone's favorite things about it. And you want to get into that as well with kind of, you know, how do you use that aspect of the create? Like, obviously there's this crazy universe. So how do you, you know, navigate and consider that when you're writing these battle reports?
So it really helps with, as I was talking before, the immersion when you craft this very just flavorful environment. And there's so many rich environments and locales you can put your story in. Like, there's entire worlds that have been converted to one big manufactorum.
Uh-huh.
You know, things of that nature. And you have strange alien worlds as well as that, and just massive hive cities.
Mm-hmm.
And these battle reports can really be happening anywhere.
Right. Like, so you're considering all of that.
Yes.
When you guys are going about writing these, you know, think about the locations that you can use, right? To go about making these stories and kind of the craziness with that you can go in and implement into your characters.
Yes, definitely. And the terrain that you set up on the table top definitely can lend itself towards any of those environments and tell a visual story of what your characters are seeing as they're going through the battlefield.
Right, so you can use the terrain and come up with cool maps and whatnot. So for like in one of your previous battle reports, what's an example of something like that, like some creativity that you've used?
So in our most recent one, we had just a setup that was pretty industrial, and it just had two power generators that were objectives, and I set that up as essentially an orbital ring that starships would resupply at, and so this large ground battle is playing out on this fragile orbital structure that has its own power generators to, you know, even hold the gravity
right
in. So it brings a whole new perspective of, when they look up, they're not seeing the clouds or anything. They're seeing just into space itself.
Right. So you're using, you know, basically the game, right? And those objectives, those two power generators. And you're thinking, as a writer, how can I take that and come up with something, you know, kind of bigger and, you know, create a bigger picture around it and use the setting into that. That's really cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. What are some ideas or other things that you think would be cool for players to do with that? Well, just like random, you know, crazy, maybe something you've considered. Yeah.
You can take your objectives and really craft where would I find these objectives? Like might say that this is just a control panel somewhere, but what is that control panel controlling?
Okay. So it's not just, here's objective one. It's more along the lines of, why is this objective one?
Yes.
And so, I'm like, oh, that's cool. So I like that. So if
you're just doing a pickup game and it's like a D6 objectives, you can kind of pick out what you want those to be.
That's right.
And use the terrain pieces you have and then and play it into the bigger picture. That's cool.
That's cool. Yeah. And that's really cool.
And one of my favorite ones is you have this setup for objectives, War of Lies, where they're worth a random amount of victory points.
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite.
So you know, that objective that's worth negative victory points or less, you know, that could be anything. What if it's a bomb? What if it's a disguised enemy operative that gets taken back to their ship?
Think it's good in the moment, but then later it comes back to bite them. That's
so
cool.
It's like, you know, if it's like, let's say you model that objective, so to speak, as a like a downed like, I don't know, Marine, you know, right?
Yes. Down Astartes.
Yeah, there's a down Astartes right there. And then, you know, they're trying to grab him and pick him up and, you know, and solidify. Again, in in-game terms, you're solidifying the objective, right? Because it's worth X amount of victory points.
Yes.
But story-wise, the story that's going on is like, hey, there's a Marine that's down right here. We need to pick him up because he's got valuable intel, right?
Yes.
Let's say the disposition of enemy forces, right?
Yeah.
And so we need to pick him up and you know, secure that objective. But, like, to your point, Iterator Josh.
right.
The big thing is, you know, hey, is he, maybe he's not the most, maybe he's a plant, right? You know, maybe he's an alpha legion.
They could be taking an alpha legion operative back to their own ship.
Yeah, right. And they don't even know it.
And, right. You and know, later on down the line that comes back to bite. I'm working that into a campaign would be super fun. I would love to. I'm gonna have to work that into something soon. Yeah.
Now everyone knows about it. So
that's neither here nor there. But that was a really, really cool idea, and that got me thinking. You know, some of the other, I don't know if you've considered this, but the other missions, I know the Mournival mission set, just another shout out for Mournival and everything they do, because their mission set with the Centurion and Decurion stuff is absolutely phenomenal. If you haven't had a chance to look through narrative mission set, highly recommend that. But even the regular, like Age of Darkness rulebook ones, there's a lot that you can...
Yeah, like War of Lies.
Oh, yes.
That one's from the regular AOD book.
Yeah, well, all the other ones, you can narratively draw so much out from that, and even using your deployment, like how they deploy, and that D6.
So the disposition of your troops, because again, you know, if you're looking at it from an actual battlefield, not we're not looking at it from a gameplay, you know, I got a Dawn of War deployment, I got this deployment, I got that. It's
But if it's a Dawn of War deployment, what does that mean?
Right, exactly.
In the larger scale conflict, right?
So, because like when you go onto, let's say, a battlefield, right? You're not necessarily choosing your...
You're never choosing your battlefield.
You're never choosing where you're...
Well, and if you are, you're winning.
I mean, here's Sun Tzu over here. But I mean, that is a big aspect of it. Like, you know, there's choke points. There's, you know, areas that, you know...
the Battle of Agincourt.
You know, you know, there's areas where there's areas of interest that both sides would have an interest in for whatever reason it may be.
Right.
And you have to, again, developing that narrative around that. Right. And then getting the objective, getting the deployment. Right. Yeah. And going, okay, cool. Is this the most ideal deployment for me? No, but when is it,
and what story is it going to tell?
Yeah, like
there's a very narrative driven deployment out of the six main ones I believe that are available to you, and I believe it's called Ambush. Of course, it's not a position that you want to be in,
right?
Mm-hmm. But narratively, it tells a great story. It could be like just a one force deploying in the middle of the battlefield, and then they're surrounded on either side by the other, by their opponent whose force is divided.
Well, and that, I'm pretty sure that specific mission with that specific mission and deployment, are they tied in together? I don't know off the top of my head.
No, that's just a deployment.
That's just a deployment. So it's a standard AOD
deployment.
Okay.
But yeah, you could see that as, you know, one force just holding, making a final stand somewhere or something of that nature.
Yeah.
Yeah, or maybe they drop potted into that area and they're being ambushed. You know, there's so many ways that you can play that. I mean, you can play almost something like where you have a caravan, you know, and let's say you have a whole bunch of rhinos that aren't really your rhinos.
They're just a part of the caravan rhino games.
Where you have a whole bunch of rhinos that are lined up, right? That are run kind of down the center. And for game purposes, they are your rhino, you know, the ambushing part, you know, the people who are getting ambushed, it's their rhinos. But as far as, the, you know, I should say that's for the story. Right. But as far as gameplay perspective, their terrain,
right,
you know, because everyone's getting out of the rhinos and they're,
right,
you know,
so they're
trying
not
to defend.
Actually, they're not actually, you know, playable rhinos. They're not included in the list. They're just terrain pieces.
But see, like using just a standard AOD mission, not even a mission,
or
deployment,
you can set up the terrain around that deployment type.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To help tell that story. And again, it kind of going back to, again, how terrain and environment help tell the story.
And then play like the breakthrough mission. Mm-hmm. And now you're trying to get,
that would be really cool.
Yeah.
That'd be sick.
That's a way of just combining AOD missions, mm-hmm, just regular rule book to create a really narrative experience.
Yeah. It's another example of how 30K is just a great narrative driven game system.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how it really lends itself to this process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And again, going back to kind of what you were saying, guest Josh, I'm being very careful how to say that. But you know, in part one, you were talking about capturing tabletop events, right, and putting them into a bat rep, and you know the process and how you do that.
Yeah.
But then you know, using the terrain, there's in that section you were talking about. Okay, talking with your opponent.
That whole pre-game, like, mm-hmm, setup phase, mm-hmm, with even who's the attacker and defender, who has first turn, a seize the initiative role, is a huge thing you could use in a
Definitely.
Battle report. If you could seize the initiative, you could, or in a story, you can write that up in so, I mean, you could go so many different
directions.
Like,
maybe you got, like, a heads up, right?
Yeah.
On comms. Comms said, hey, you're going to be ambushed right now. And there's so many ways that you can, like you said, you can build off of that. Like what guest Josh, what you were talking about was, you know, having that pregame, so to speak, talk with your fellow players, and saying, hey, not only is your character, what are they about, what do your boys do, and all that jazz.
Yeah.
But then
it's not just what's your list, it's what's your list and what's their story.
Yeah, what's the story behind your list?
Right.
You know,
yeah,
what's the story behind your character? Like what you were talking about, guest Josh. Pointing doesn't really help over an audio medium. but you know, going from that and then building off of that and then using, again, getting back to this, is having the environment help tell that story, right?
Yes.
You have that conversation, hey, I'm getting ambushed or whatever it is, and blah, 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 and yada, yada. You get, and then again, there's almost like a sense of getting fired up.
It's like you create a story. It's like you literally are creating a situation. You're being what it is that you're doing is you're being intentional about creating a narrative situation for why the battle is happening. And both players have a narrative driven character and are looking at it almost from a role play perspective when they're fighting. And so it naturally, like, you writing a battle report is just the next natural step.
Right, exactly.
and that's right.
Yeah.
You see, you talk to them about where do you see your army attacking from, or what kind of battlefield do you see this taking place in? Like, maybe you have a lot of tanks and you're looking for more of an open battlefield or an assault on a fortified position, something of that nature.
And you can use that to, and I know for a lot of our campaign games we've been doing that type of thing, and it's been a lot of fun.
All right, and we are back with part three. And so now that we've talked about how to capture tabletop events on, you know, and turn them into bat reps using the narration of what's occurring on the battlefield, and to flesh out your writing style when you're writing it out.
Right.
And then also how the terrain and how you set things up and the mission and your deployment, how that also can play a role in the storytelling element of your bat reps. Now, this last part is basically a culmination of everything that we spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to use an example that you've done, guest Josh, on basically, you know, how you did this. So basically, you know, now it's kind of your turn to shine, you know, and talk about basically what you do and show us, show all of us listeners, including Iterator Josh and
well.
I. Yeah.
This is a fresh battle report. We haven't had a chance to actually go through this yet. So we're getting all of this live, which is going to be exciting as well.
Yeah. So, to start off, this was a game that, Dan and I played a couple weeks ago, and we had decided that this was going to be an encounter later on down the line in two of our characters' histories on their timelines. And we looked at where we wanted this to occur and sort of brought in the history and the time period of where this battle would occur. And late heresy, you got on the way to the Siege of Terra itself, and that's kind of where these events are unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of thought about what situation brings these two forces into contact during this period of the heresy.
Right.
And the traitors are on the way to, you know, Terra to contribute to the siege there. And this loyalist force is going to be intercepting them at some point along that path.
Right.
So this is going to happen at a spaceport, sort of on what in the 40K setting, are the Warhammer setting in general, are described as orbital rings, where starships resupply.
Right.
So, and the way we had the tabletop terrain set up, we had a pretty densely populated industrial area with a, you know, dense buildings and sort of short avenues and these power generators.
Almost a zone mortalis, but not in a zone, not in a inside of a ship.
The way it looked was very much, like you said, Zone Mortalis.
It was very dense.
Yes,
but more, almost more like a Stalingrad, if that makes any sense.
Right,
you know,
right.
Where instead of the lanes being made from like the inside of a ship or some mining, I guess,
like
facility
a bunker. Or something like that.
Mm-hmm. It's more along the lines of, and you have all these
like
narrow paths.
Exactly. Like city fight type idea.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes, definitely. And we had these two big power sources, so I figured it has to be a setting where lots of power is going to need to be generated.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the purpose of these? And I thought on the orbital ring, these generators, a power source like that could be used to create your artificial gravity. So you have a lot of opportunities for that.
Yeah.
So when those go, not only are they going to cause, you know, a big explosion, lots of wreckage, which is a rule that we factored into during the game, but we can flavor that in the tabletop as maybe that area doesn't have any gravity anymore. And the way those guys get removed from the tabletop is they are carried off into space.
right.
Exactly.
They have a lot of jump packs, and that creates a hazard all its own.
Right, exactly. And the other thing that I thought was pretty cool about this game that we played was your approach to me at the beginning. So, again, what he just explained right now, he came to me and he was like, "Hey, Dan, he already knew my character at this point. We've played a handful of games in a campaign where his character, Gaius, played.
They had played a whole campaign against one another where they were the two commanding, you know, officers in charge of is a spin-off game after the fact.
Exactly. So this is actually just a one-off game. This wasn't a part of the campaign.
Exactly.
This was a pickup game that me and guest Josh were just like, hey, you want to play a game?
And had I been playing against, you know, guest Josh, we could have worked, or he could have done the same exact story, right?
Yes.
You know, just worked in my character instead of a Mel.
Exactly, exactly. And the thing is that, like, you know, we've had this bad blood, or your character and my character, I should say. I don't like you guys.
Oh, no.
That's why we brought you on the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to my home. I don't like you.
What's going to happen next?
Yeah, but, you know, Urbara and Gaius don't like each other. They have this bad blood between each other. And they're trying, you know, from the prior campaign that we played. So you are aware of who Amel is and what his background is and vice versa. I'm very much aware of who Gaius is and how he operates and how he thinks.
And as a side note on that, just kind of as like a little commentary, the way you guys play it's almost like you play to the meta of one another's characters, where it's like, how would Gaius consider he knows a little bit about Amel, but he hasn't fought him in a while.
Yes.
How would he, like, he knows his backstory. He knows who he was. He saw him, you know, a while back, but I want to go in and, you know, obviously we're going to engage today. So I need to consider what I learned in the past. And I think the way you guys play your list with that and the way our community does that is really, really cool. Where it's like a strategy. It's like a strategy and story building meta, which is really interesting.
Yeah, because we build off of, you know, prior engagements that these two characters have been a part of.
Right.
Because this the first encounter between these two characters was very early on in the Horus Heresy. And this was Gaius, the Ultramarines character's first encounter with traitor Marines.
Right.
So they were drastically unprepared. That's how that was flavored. And they were sort of beaten by Amel's forces in that situation. But the two characters came into combat and through that sort of developed a rivalry on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when Gaius kicked Amel down the river.
And similarly, Amel took a wound off of Gaius. So I flavored that as he injured him and gave him an augmented eye. Essentially. So he remembers every time he looks in the mirror, he remembers that guy.
Exactly. Like, I remember this guy.
That messed up his eye.
But see, that's the thing is that now we're looking at, again, kind of the flavor aspect of bringing what we've talked about prior. You guessed, Josh, came up to me prior to playing this pickup game, and you said, hey, why don't we do this? Or are you are you bringing a Mel?
Yeah,
I am. Cool. Well, what if we do this? What if we do that? What are these concepts about what you're thinking about? And it wasn't like the day of, I think it was like a day prior or something like that when we were kind of setting up who we're going to play against and all that, you know, but I mean, not to say that you have to do it, you know, days in advance, you could do it on the spot,
of course.
But the idea was, is that you came up to me and you were asking questions about kind of how to flavor this game. And then I was kind of, and again, I was reciprocating that. I go, hey, what about this idea? What about that idea? You know, and we kind of came up with a scene prior to actually playing the battle, right?
Yeah.
Or playing on the tabletop. So then we actually got everything. We created that environment. That was a really cool thing that I really admire that you do, is that you set a scene in your head prior. Because I already know what you're going to be doing later on is you're going to be writing up a bat rap, right? You're going to be writing up this cool narrative. and so you're creating this scene in your head, and it really makes me want to get on board with whatever you're doing and volunteer information, because I go, hey, wouldn't it be kind of cool if this? Wouldn't it be kind of cool if that? Mm-hmm. And again, bouncing these ideas off each other, and we create this really cool story, this really cool narrative. And then we'd go out finally on the tabletop, and it's almost like this anticipation.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. It's almost like a pre-war meeting, and our whole community, like it's an excitement kind of before the games start going, where everyone's like, "All right, like we know what's about to go down." And it's so much fun,
and it's cool because you have that anticipation of like, "All right, we're gonna do this, right?" Exactly. We're gonna throw down. You know,
eager for the story to play out.
Exactly. Right. I'm not eager to win. I can care less. Yeah. Again, if you're coming from that mindset, that perspective going into the game, you can kind of care less about whether you win or lose. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, like if I like curb stomp you or you curb stomp me, you know, it's like, you know, I'm
that's
not
the story that could be a story. Yeah.
Exactly.
And then you can work that into your character and bring it back for next game and play it out then. And like, there's always ways to work it.
Exactly. Yeah. But I'm not looking to like, I need to win, you know, a lot of times, like, obviously we calculate points at the end of the game and we go, okay, you know, like, so who won this engagement based off the mission?
Into the larger narrative.
But that's a whole point.
But that doesn't mean you have less fun.
The calculation of the points at the end of the game, right? Yeah. Or the mission objectives. I don't want to say points because sometimes there isn't points. The calculation of who wins the mission is not necessarily so to say, hey, I won, you lost. It's more along the lines of how are you going to write the bat rep, you know, how
what's
how
the
is
tone?
It? Yeah, exactly.
And after this battle went down, I think both of our characters died in the tabletop.
Mm-hmm.
Right, they both lost all their wounds.
Yeah,
right.
And I talked about that in the prior episode. This is the same episode where Amel gets killed.
Same game. Yes.
Yeah, this is the same game. So if you listen to our prior episode, when I say this is where Amel gets killed again, it's those highlight moments that you were talking about of, you know, creating that narrative and that story. But it was at games about, you know, so both of our characters got killed. I'm sorry for interjecting.
Oh, no, it's all good. Yeah, that's sort of, we decided because of that circumstance that happened in the tabletop game, because of that event, both of our characters dying, and because of their rivalry in their past, mm-hmm. that this was going to be a good endpoint for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of where I wanted to take that bat rep. Yeah.
So it's kind of like poetry.
The community here knows Amel's, you know, background. However, they're not really up to date with Gaius, mm-hmm. outside of maybe a few, you know, mentions. So what's Gaius's story? What's his, you know, where does he start? And kind of bring everyone up to speed with that.
So he is sort of from one of the 500 worlds. He's Ultramarines, right? But before you roll your eyes, I know people aren't big fans of the Ultramarines. He's one of the cool Ultramarines. They're, right. He's from a destroyer company. Mm-hmm. Which is an interesting, you know, segment of their operation, because they're normally the heroes in blue, right? But these guys sport black armor with blue accents,
mm-hmm.
and they carry deadly weapons.
And the way you paint them is gorgeous, man.
Yeah, so. Yeah, thanks.
But I'm sorry, you were saying.
Yeah, they are not the paragons, you know, that you look for. And their rivalries with these traitor characters are not necessarily because of their loyalty. It's a more personal thing than that.
Yeah.
They couldn't care less what legion they're from or what master they serve.
Well, and that kind of says something about Gaius's character. This is a personal combat for him. So how does that play, you know, how does that play out?
Now, this is a very personal engagement for him. He has sought this out. He's not patrolling looking to defend Terra. He's looking for Amel. Because he wants to hunt him down and take his revenge.
Yeah.
Because of the prior engagement that we had with, in game,
uh-huh.
it was the prior campaign. But from the narrative perspective, it's we took the planet
right.
that Gaius was supposed to, was assigned to defend.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So he's got a very personal reason to get involved here, and it's because of the events of that prior campaign.
And he's now out kind of basically like looking to reclaim his honor in a sense.
Yes.
That's what's up. Definitely. So as far as the battle report that you wrote up and everything getting into it, like what were the standout moments from this game that you impacted or that you used in the battle report? Or some of your favorite moments?
So there's two big ones, and okay. I think... this ties into what we were saying, the deaths of these two characters.
Okay.
Were definitely two big ones. First, Gaius, he fought an engagement with a whole squad of Jesteran Terminators, and he got tremendously lucky with his armor rolls, and he just survived a lot of hits.
Okay.
And so his engagement is just this drag-out fight where he...
How'd you write that narratively, just out of curiosity? Like, what was the tone with that?
So as he's going, he's being consumed by this need for revenge, and it just defies all the logic that the Ultramarines, you know, should have and are known for. So he's pushing his soldiers and his guys into this conflict that he knows they're not going to win.
Uh-huh.
And his
kind of the destroyer company mindset almost. Yeah.
As he goes, you know, his armor is falling apart. He's losing his shields and becoming more injured as it goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And some of his guys are seeing this madness, and they start to abandon him.
Okay.
You know, like it's a lost cause.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
definitely.
And so I guess what are the, you know, that's the scene that's occurring as far as in your mind and in my mind, right? As we're rolling dice and playing out the, mm-hmm. the game from turn, you know, turn one, turn two, turn three, turn four.
Yeah.
But what actually happened on the tabletop that inspired that narrative?
Yeah, and I think this was even more of a points thing, but the commander of his human auxiliaries got involved in this engagement, but part of his squad
charged by the sons of Horus, is what you mean?
No, he charged them.
Oh, he charged them? Yeah. Okay.
he's a bold human. And he...
The guy was fearless.
All right.
He decided at some point enough of the infantry between him and the enemy squad got killed that he was out of... he was able to get out of combat.
Okay.
And he wanted that squad to survive, so I moved them away from the Jesteran and that engagement.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of him abandoning his commander that is going to stay and fight this crazy battle against these strong Terminators.
And maybe that's how Gaia sees it in the moment, is them abandoning him. But in reality, they were kind of strategically repositioning, right? Because, it sounds like that's what it made sense for them to do in the call of the game. But you're saying from the perspective of Gaius, it looked like they were abandoning him.
Yeah, he looks over his shoulder in the middle of this combat while he's getting ganged up on by all these Justeran Terminators, and he sees his guys just, you know, leaving him behind.
Yeah.
It was him and also some suzerain, correct?
Yeah, some suzerains. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And these suzerains have been also big characters, and this is the endpoint for a lot of them as well.
Yeah, you have a lot of custom, custom named and stories for them as well, yeah.
And so I think it's really cool how, again, that's a great example of how you can adapt the game and how the dice rolls, the dice rolls and how the game ends up playing out, but also creating the narrative aspect. And so if anyone who's listening right now, you can kind of go from the concept of, okay, cool, let's use this awesome event that happened. And now, and because the story already told itself, just add a little bit of flavor to it, you know, like what we're doing. And again,
the perspective of the characters as the events unfold. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And then, you know, we're talking about this as it's happening, you know? Yeah. So the next level of it would be as it's occurring between the both of us, right? Yeah. Oh, dude, and this is going on. And oh, you know, he's looked behind his shoulder. As his men are dying around him, he sees the auxiliaries running away and he feels abandoned or whatever the case may be. Yeah. You know, it plays to that narrative.
As soon as you started talking about that, it made me think of, I don't know why, but the Lord of the Rings in the fight where, you know, that scene from the first movie, the battle of, I forget the name of the dwarf, but it's his tomb. I think it's Balin's tomb.
Oh, Balin's tomb, right. Mm-hmm.
And that you know, the scene of Frodo and the troll fight, or the troll stabbing Frodo. It's like, that's such a specific moment. And that is an armor save, you know, being passed. And that's, you know, that's how you can play those things out. Where that's, you know, that's, that could be an example of Frodo getting that four up invulnerable save when that troll stabs him, but at the Mithril, saves. And it's like those type of stories.
Exactly. Yeah. But imagine if you're rolling that out. Here's a good example. Anyone who's listening to this right now, watch that scene again from Lord of the Rings and pretend that was actually a bat rap.
Even better. Astartes actually does a really good job. And I remember seeing a discussion somewhere where the creator of the Astartes film project, he specifically designed that encounter with the Marines combating the psychics, those, you know, the two psychic beings or whatever, and then running up, that's the movement phase. The Marines sit and they rapid fire their bolters. Some of them rapid fire, some of them just fire off shots, right? But some of them sit there and rapid fire. The ones that don't, because, you know, Heresy, this is how it works. If you rapid fire, you cannot charge.
Right. So they're up on the top and they're not going to charge.
Right. And they're rapid firing. Mm-hmm. However, the ones running in pull their bolt pistols and are firing their bolt pistols as they're moving in.
Biggest pistol weapons you could shoot. Oh, yep, I never caught that. That's really cool.
He designed it specifically to show that. So that's a little fun fact about Astartes. Shout out to that project. It's absolutely awesome. But
it's the next level of Battle Force.
No, literally. Thinking it, and I think that's, I forget what we were originally talking about, but that was kind of to the effect of where we were originally going with that.
And that's that's the whole idea, is that playing out, you know, these scenes. So like with Astartes, with Balin's tomb, right, in the Mines of Moria, and also with our bat rap, guest Josh, right, is that when we were playing, right, there was that scene when Amel was running past the generator. I was talking about a little bit about this in the prior episode, right?
And then
your plasma guy, support squad, on the other side of that generator, that gravitic whatever nuclear generator thing, turns around and fires at it, right? And it goes nuclear. It goes off and it kills them, but it also kills Amel, who's running on the other side, right? Yeah. And see, so it's using the terrain around you, right, to help tell the story, you know, of what's going on. So, you know, on the tabletop, it's just, oh, cool, like I'm running down the side. And again, I Did I have to run down that side? No, I didn't. But it's not my decision. It's Amel's decision. You know, who am I to say no to that?
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, he's running adjacent to that nuclear generator, gravitic generator, because he's trying to get to the, you know, the other squad who, you know, that just got out of
him down. Yeah.
Yeah. It's him and his squad are trying to go over there. But then the other guys get comms, you know, hey, you know, like, the other guys on the other side of this generator, you know, like, we need backup. And then they're like, we can't get there in time, but we know what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
Shoot this thing. And that's what they did. And then Amel dies. And see, like, again, it's telling that scene. It's telling that story just from rolling dice, because I just moved 6 inches, right?
Yeah.
You know, and in that turn, shot, you know, and I was about to move 6 inches and charge the next turn. And then
creating the bigger picture for why.
Yeah, exactly. And on the flip side, it was, that was my turn, and it came to your turn, and then you just turn around and you shot with, you know, 2 rapid fire plasma support squads. And we're creating this big scene based off of the terrain that you created, that you set up. You set the scene of what's, first of all, you set the scene of what's occurring, right?
Yeah.
You put down all the terrain on the tabletop and you know, of where everything's at, right? You know, and the importance of certain aspects of the models on the tabletop, right? And certain parameters of, you know, the mission objectives.
Right.
And then
tying it all together and getting it all in words in the end.
It's a lot like D&D, if anybody's ever played Dungeons & Dragons. You have that theater of the mind aspect. You want to really put yourself there and envision, what are your Marines seeing on the field? What does this terrain look like? And where are you?
And I think that that's, again, using that terrain, using the terrain to tell the story, to help tell the story. And I think that's a great example of that. And then on the flip side, what happened with Gaius?
And so Gaius, in this event, he's facing down these Terminators and a bunch of Reavers with his suzerains. And he's a Praetor character in this, so he's a little bit tankier.
Mm-hmm.
His suzerains are being killed off around him one by one. And he's eventually left with all these Justeran Terminators. And you think, you know, it's a foregone conclusion at that point. He's done. But on the tabletop, he made a lot of saves.
Dude, you were getting so lucky.
Yeah, he stuck around far longer than he had any reason to. Yeah. And I just flavored it as this hatred driving him towards that. And he eventually does get overpowered, but, you know, after giving them, you know, a good run for their money, and he's just eventually beaten down by all these Justeran Terminators.
So that, like, standout feature from the game was that he, you know, stuck around, right?
Yes.
And was maybe in combat for a turn and a half, or maybe even 2 full turns, right?
Yeah.
And then
it was like 3 turns.
So he was in there for a long time.
He was making invul saves
like left and right, dude, like nobody's business. Yeah. That's what's up.
It was really cool. It was a lot, because I mean he was doing it against me, right?
Yeah.
But again, you know,
you're
me and Josh
almost fired up for guys.
Exactly.
You're like, oh yeah, kill that Justeran.
Exactly. Because the thing is, for me, is I already have an understanding who Gaius is. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've played like about 4 or 5 games with this character, so I'm very well versed about who Gaius is, his background, what fuels him, what drives him,
community, and like we're talking about this stuff on the Discord, you know, weekly as well, all the time. Yeah,
exactly. And so then it comes down to it is that, you know, I'm getting fired up, even though I'm not doing well on the tabletop. You know, I'm missing, you know,
you're not taking it personally that he's rolling his invulnerable saves.
Yeah, exactly. If I roll like, you know, X amount of dice to hit and I only get 1, and I'm just gonna be like, instead of me going, oh god,
it's, you know Gaius is blocking
yeah,
it and
no,
it's
this
cool thing
this guy's
on.
Got this boarding shield, he's just hitting, you know, he's blocking stuff, and then I finally get like a power fist hit on him, right?
Yeah,
you know, I mean, one power fist should knock him out, it's double his strength, right?
Yeah.
But you make this like 3 invulnerable saves and it like however many, right, over and over and over again, and I'm getting fired up because the way I'm looking at it is
this Gaius is just kicking butt.
Gaius is getting
he really wants to scrap
him. Yeah, Gaius is getting beaten to shreds, right? Like he's bloody to a pulp.
Yeah,
right. Yet he like pure hatred of like the these of, I hate these sons of Horus, I hate Amel Urbara, I hate what these guys are, and I I will not die. Reminds not today. Like, I am going to keep on this. My hatred will fuel me. Like, and that's a cool thing. Like, when you and me, guest Josh, when we're playing it out and we're rolling dice, we're literally talking about this. And it's so cool.
Yeah. And I had this one moment during that fight, just to show how like long and drag out this conflict goes, is when he does take a hit and gets a wound knocked off of him. He essentially loses his boarding shield, and like the impact dislocates his shoulder, and he like rips off of his shoulder pauldron to like set his shoulder back.
Yeah,
it's up. It's almost like the end of if you've seen Lone Survivor, movie with it's Mark Wahlberg and but there's that I forget his name, but one of the SEALs,
Marcus Luttrell.
It wasn't Luttrell. It's one of the SEALs that passed away during that. But he had a final stand that's portrayed in that movie, and it really,
the CEO.
That's what made me think. That's it. Brought that scene to life just hearing you guys talk about it, and that's so that's awesome.
Yeah, and the thing is that like then when the game's over, right? Mm-hmm. Once we get done and we wrap up, the game's over.
Go grab food.
And we're talking about this after the fact, right? You know, in front of the gaming store, you know, when we go to the restaurant after and to you know, go chat about what the heck just happened.
There's like this post discussion of what went down and like where it's going next.
Right. Exactly. But again, that's all fuel for your mind so that when you go back and maybe you can expound upon this, you know, in more detail. But how does that play into your writing process? Because now we talked about kind of what happens and using an example of what happens on the tabletop in the environment. How, when you get home, how does these events influence your writing style and how does that process go about?
Yeah. So when these events happen and when we have this discourse between the opponent and yourself about the events that are going on, I like to take notes on this. And in moments that we both particularly get excited for, because that's what we really want to see.
Yeah.
Right.
And we want to bring those moments to life. And that's where I invest the most time on in these battle reports. I like to focus down on these certain events, not quite that this character moved here or this combat was resolved this way, but these specific events and the character's perspective on them.
I think a big takeaway that I just had from that little thing was focus on the things that people, the moments that people got excited the most about. Definitely. That was really a really cool thing to say. I think that's awesome that you focus on what, you know, maybe not the most important thing, like as far as in terms of the game and who wins and loses, but what was the most fun and let's make a story about that. That's really cool. I think that I think that's why we all love why you do this or love your write up so much.
Because the objectives, you know, for everyone, including yourself, Iterator Josh.
Right.
I'm doing pretty good with this, I think. But the objectives of the game was kind of like almost like a big game hunting thing where it's, you know, there was super heavies on the tabletop.
Yeah.
Yes. And you know, there was, you know, you got X amount of points for taking out a super heavy. You had X amount of points for taking out HQs and independent characters.
Right.
But the thing was, is that even though those were the mission objectives, we didn't talk about that this entire time for part three.
Yeah.
Because you can say, well, that was a mission set. That's why they were there setting the setting.
Yeah, it's to but kill, again, hunt each other down and kill each other off. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing is that, like, getting back to what guest Josh was talking about, what you were saying was, you know, it's about those important moments that, you know, what we remember from the tabletop. It's, you know, after the fact, when we go out and we're chatting after post battle, right?
Yeah.
You know, and you hone in on those highlights that we both get fired up about, right? What are the things that we remembered? Because I don't remember to be honest, I don't remember the objectives of that game. I don't really remember who won that game, to be completely honest with you. But I do remember those moments. And so the key is to hone in on those moments, like you were saying, Iterator Josh, is that to hone in on the moments that you get fired up about, you know, that both of y'all get fired up about.
Exactly.
Like, you know,
I remember that one of your Reaver sergeants, the Storm Lord, my super heavy, got whittled down by his super heavy, but that's not what killed it. What ended the Storm Lord was the Reaver sergeant you know, jumping at this Baneblade chassis tank, this monstrous war engine, and just bring a power fist down on top of it. And that's how it erupts into this big explosion.
Well, he hits it, and yes. It explodes, and he gets vaporized as a result of that.
And the way I flavored that in the tabletop is that, you know, the way Baneblades are built, they're built like buildings, right?
Mm-hmm.
I had him where his power fist knocks a support pillar down into the reactor of the Baneblade internally and sends it critical and just vaporizes everything.
Right? That's so cool. So, yeah. And again, it's not necessarily, oh, I punched a track and it went boom.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's looking at the environment around it. And again, another thing that you and I both do is we take pictures.
Yes.
We take a lot of pictures. So it's like if something happened, you know, like, for example, that Baneblade example, you and I take pictures of that and we go, okay, hey, this is kind of a cool moment. Again, that's just a little thing to jog your memory so that when you're writing that, I'm assuming at least, when you're writing that bat rep, that those pictures help you remember, like, not just what happened, but the scene around it, like,
yeah,
you know, what other things were in the area.
Captures where those units are and their positions around it. Who's seeing this explosion? Are people looking back over their shoulders and seeing a guy jumping at this Baneblade with the power fist? Are they ducking for cover? Because one thing that happened as a part of that was the Reavers had a Master of Signal and a character with them that saw this happen and broke off from the squad and ran the other direction.
Yeah, dude, I had that guy book it.
Yeah, you're like, I'm not.
Maybe that Master of Signal knows a little bit more about Baneblade variant tanks.
Right.
And he sees this guy going for it with a power fist. And he says, oh, no, I cannot be here.
Like, too close.
Yeah, get back.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And again, because in-game, I had the Master of Signal break off and go in the other direction. So as a Reavers ran towards the Baneblade, the Master of Signal broke off from that squad and booked it in the other, like, literally booked it. He moved his 6 inches and then ran, further away, trying to get away from that explosion as far away as he possibly can. Again, that was a tactical decision by me, you know?
Right.
But it evokes narrative storylines. Well,
and I think the biggest, this just came to mind here, but it's like, just because you calmly move your model 6 inches on the tabletop and then calmly roll a dice to see how far extra he runs doesn't mean that Master of Signal just stood up and calmly, you know, disengaged from the Baneblade and, you know, shuffled over and walked. Like, that's not what actually went down.
Right.
So you're just fleshing that out and bringing life to it. I think that that's cool.
And
you can kind of use the rolls. Like, if you rolled a one, maybe he stumbles and falls and you can use that. And then when you roll a six, you know, there's something that happens.
Yeah, this guy's sprinting.
Right. Kind of like you were saying with D&D, like, you know, you have your critical successes, critical failures. Yeah.
There's also the aspect of, if this guy, this space marine, turns around, leaves his guys, and runs the other way, how are his remaining guys that he's just abandoned on the battlefield going to react to that? And I definitely have that sergeant exchange words with this Master of Signal that's going to run away. There's a conversation there.
That's actually cool. I didn't read that. I'm going to... Oh, yeah, dude. Yeah. That's sick.
Yeah.
He says, we need to back away from this Baneblade. It's going to explode if you do that. You know, I'll call in an artillery strike on them. And he says, I've got all the artillery I need right here with the power pass. And so the Master of Signal says, sees where it's going, and he goes, no. And runs away.
Maybe a little more experience than that particular Reaver.
I got all the artillery I ever need right here, sir.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. That's awesome.
Yeah, send it. but that's the cool thing is that, again, I think this is a good conclusion to everything that we've been talking about, is getting those aspects of what's going on the tabletop, and then actual dice rolls, actual movements, actual models being pulled from the table, and giving it a fun narrative twist.
Right.
And then immortalizing that.
By writing it out.
Exactly.
What
Well, that about wraps up this episode. So just a quick recap over what we talked about over the last three segments. Josh, what were some of the things that really kind of spoke to you, that really kind of stuck out for you?
Yeah, I think as far as like takeaway moments, right? I think the two big things that really stuck out to me, number one is if you feel motivated or encouraged by this, then definitely do it. And I'll get more to why, you know, with that in a second. But really like a big light bulb moment for me, like what I said earlier, is focusing on the things that people have the most fun with. And I kind of even throughout this interview and everything, I felt like I was thinking about, oh, how do you get the, you know, the important things? Like, how do you translate all that? But in reality, that's not necessarily the goal. The goal is just to focus and bring light the fun things that everyone enjoys. I just think that was really cool. And that was kind of like a learning moment for myself. But getting back to the first thing, right, is as a result of your battle reports in our community and you starting to write these and post these, there are now people that have been playing Warhammer for less than 6 months that are doing the same thing and that are kind of taking and like, and it's cool to see like you're modeling an aspect of the hobby of, hey, you know, I'm going to play these games and do this really cool narrative aspect. And people are seeing that modeled by players in the community. So they're just naturally doing the same thing.
Right.
So, you know, kind of to what I was initially saying with, if this is something that that you feel encouraged or motivated by, definitely, you know, do it and you know, post a couple battle reports, send some stuff out, you know, it's cheesy toy soldier stuff, but you know, we're the ones that buy them. So, you know, have fun with it.
And, I certainly, you know, I didn't think writing was like going to be my favorite pastime when I got into this. Like, it's just something that I tried, cause I saw a battle report in a channel on our Discord, and I thought, well, you know, I'll give that a shot. It ended up being one of my favorite aspects of the hobby.
Yeah, because you're not a writer, correct? Like yeah, I think you said to me one time that you're not really, that isn't really your strong point, or at least you thought it wasn't, right?
Yeah, I definitely didn't do any writing before I got into the hobby at all.
Like, at all?
Yeah.
I could have said But, and that's the thing, is that the story's already written for you. You're just fleshing it out.
Right.
It's something that I enjoyed writing about. So it's definitely brought that aspect of the hobby into it, and I've had a good time with it.
What would you say were some of your biggest takeaways, Dan?
So when we play this game, you know, for however long we've been playing it, we always think about, we can always go back to that one game or those handful of games where there's this awesome moment that we played in the past. And, you know, it's not really the games that we win or lose that we remember.
It's the standout moments.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So I think the cool thing that guest Josh does is he immortalizes those events in the bat rep, and then you share that with your community.
Right.
You know, because you don't just immortalize it, because, you know, we all immortalize these moments in our brain.
Yeah.
But what you're doing, guest Josh, is you're immortalizing that. And then you're sharing that with the rest of us.
Right.
You know, on
and
the
bat. We get to enjoy it.
And and we all get to enjoy the moments that you find interesting and fascinating. And what that does is that it creates a storied history, not only with the characters that are on the tabletop, but also it creates a bonding experience with your fellow community members. Using these bonding moments and a shared experience together really creates a more tight-knit community, you know, and then which you all get to enjoy together. I mean, and what you, and a part of the reason why the community is able to be as, you know, as fun as it is here is in no small part to what you do. And it's really cool that you brought that aspect to our community. And I want to thank you for that.
Appreciate the kind words.
Yeah, man. Well, hey, it's true. And again, going off what Iterator Josh said was, you know, now you're inspiring other people to think about, you know, in our community at least, of, hey, I want to do that too. You know, I want to immortalize my guys as well.
And I think what's really cool is, like, I think it's a really cool blessing for the people joining our community for them to have someone model that. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Thank you for coming out.
Yeah.
And, you know, also talking with us.
A ton of fun.
Yeah, dude. Like this. Yeah, we had a lot of fun, and especially picking your brain because I see you do this all the time, you know, on our Discord, our local Discord, and all that jazz. But also, you know, now we get to kind of see an understanding of what, you know, the mechanisms that you use behind the scene, and how you're able to flesh that out, not only just for Josh and I, but really for anyone else that's listening to this podcast.
Yeah, well, if anybody learns anything today, that's great. That's awesome. That's what I'm here to do.
Yeah, battle reports will be written as a result of this, so shoot those over to us. I'm sure we talked about this off air, but we all would love to see those. So whatever definitely. You guys come up with, shoot those over, and we'll definitely take a look at them and read them. It's been, like we've said, it's been awesome reading and taking a look at the models you guys are making and sending to us already.
Yeah,
I've been enjoying that.
It's absolutely fantastic. And so real quick, guest Josh. And yeah. I think I did pretty well with that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So anyone who's listening in and all that, you know, how can they get a hold of you and kind of pick your brain?
So I think the best way is going to be on my Instagram. I'm at demolition_man1995
okay
on Instagram.
Sounds good.
And if you've got any questions or anything, just shoot me a message on there, and when I've got time, I'd be happy to answer.
All right, awesome, and so
if anyone wants to read up on that, it's going to be attached to this podcast in the notes, and so y'all can give that a look and see for yourself the end product. All right, and so the next thing we're going to do is a couple of shout-outs. So first of all, we're going to talk about Oil Spill Painting Studio. So check me out on Instagram and Facebook for any updates on my latest commissions and projects. Again, if you have any inquiries in regarding commissions or anything of that nature, again, I really like getting into the nitty-gritty of who your character is and what they're all about. So it's not just a paint job. It's actually telling a story behind who your character is. So again, if you want to get a hold of me, Instagram, Facebook at Oil Spill Painting Studio. Also, I want to do a shout out to a community out there. So a 30K group at the Black Oil Club in Brno, Czech Republic. Those guys, they reached out to me and they have been an absolute blast talking to, you know, what they're doing over there in Brno, you know, with really telling the narrative and getting excited about their characters, you know, getting excited about their boys, and you know, and then sharing that with everyone. I mean, one of their community members, it's funny, he is a Sons of Horus player, and he's like, well, my company's actually the 37th company as well. And I'm like, oh, man. So I thought that was really cool. You know, like, what are the odds on that?
Right.
You know, so, but yeah, and he was talking about what his boys were all about. You know, he had this write-up on their background and everything. And then, you know, the rest of their community as well, really buying in to the to playing a narrative style gameplay, you know, not really looking to play to win, but playing to tell that story, everything that we've been talking about, you know, not only this episode, but the past couple episodes. So shout out to you guys at the Black Oil Club. Y'all are awesome. And then also be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at the Iterators Podcast. And again, let us know, you know, what you're doing. You know, if you have any ideas about, or, you know, if this inspired any ideas of how you want to do your bat reps or any of that nature. And like what Iterator Josh said, you know, if you have anything that you like want to share with us.
Yeah, it over. Like seriously, always, particularly I check the Facebook stuff more often, but I'm always down to talk about heresy stuff, and I'd be up for, if you just want to kind of, you know, have someone to bounce ideas off of and that type of thing. I'm not gonna change my schedule for it, but you know, if I'm available, I'm always happy to talk heresy stuff, and I'd love to work with different guys with that. So always feel free to message us.
Yeah, absolutely. So all of our updates on new episodes and really what we're up to will be posted there. So be sure to check that out. Well, in any case, my name is Daniel, and I'm joined by my co-host, Josh.
Have a good one.
All right. And we are the Iterators Podcast, and we'll see you next time.